What number is this, Chip?
Episode 2, The Monkeys, Side 2.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
And welcome once again to your monthly Monkeys podcast, Zilch, episode 2, where we're going to discuss side 2 of the first Monkeys album. Joining me today, we have Mr. Craig Cohen.
Hi, Ken.
Mr. Craig Smith.
Hello, Ken.
And Mr. Jeff Hewlett.
Hey, everybody.
How are we doing today, guys?
Great. Awesome.
Doing well.
We've had some amazing feedback, and we have some iTunes reviews. So
Yay.
Let's check the what we're going to call the Monkeys Mailbag and check out some fan response to the show.
P.O. Box 9847.
Hot Rod 45330. I don't make these names up, I just read them. I love listening to this podcast. Tells me a lot of stuff that I didn't know about the Monkeys. Keep up the good work. Thank you for listening. We also have Jazz for Jeff. He says, what a great hour. Bravo to Ken and the staff for an amazing hour. It is so refreshing to hear the guys getting the respect they deserve. I used to get my butt kicked as a kid for admiration of the Monkeys, and now they are celebrated with this tremendous podcast. Good things happen to those who wait. You know, the show, thank you very much, right, guys? That's pretty cool.
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. It's always great to get feedback, especially positive feedback.
My only problem with it, he says, what a great hour, but I think the show actually went over an hour, so apparently the hour was good, but the rest of it not so much. But we're glad you're listening anyway, Jazz for Jeff. We also have someone that says totally groovy, and that's from Spherical Gerbil. Again, I don't make these names up. Hi, we're glad you're out there. It's wonderful
to see.
The
name is groovy.
Yeah, it's definitely groovy.
Hey, that's a groovy button. What does it say?
Love is the ultimate trip.
Oh, that's a nice thought.
That's a groovy button. What does it say?
Save the Texas Prairie Chicken.
It's wonderful to see the Monkeys have their own podcast. As a devoted fan, it's very pleasurable to listen along and share in the joy of the band. And then someone writes, okay, librarian, it's about time. I'm so glad I finally got All Monkeys All the Time podcast. Ken and his gang obviously know their stuff. You guys are my gang now. What do you think of that? I didn't
I'm
write.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I'm cool with it.
Both as
I knew what I signed up for.
Okay. Both as podcasters and Monkey fans, I'm coming up on 30 years in fandom, and I've learned something new from both of the episodes I've listened to so far. So we want to thank you for listening. And again, if you want to be mentioned on this podcast, rate us on iTunes. That's a good way to get it. It's our little reward, about the best thing you can do. And if you want to help the show out, rate us on iTunes and tell your friends. We also have a couple other little things I'd like to say hi to some people. Randall Buey, Ron Nelson, Starla Littlefield, Frank Serious Monkey, and Natalie Neckerman. And there was a really cool discussion on the page. I'm sure you guys saw it. Hollywood Land Dave asked, what if the Monkeys never broke up?
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of that discussion?
Well, I thought it was great. And I did. You actually bailed me out when I said in that world, Pool It never would have got made, and that's a world that I can't live in. And you said, well, maybe Mike would have contributed 4 songs to the album that became Pool It. So
that's right.
That made that reality a little bit more plausible for me.
And I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the road that didn't turn into an actual episode of Zilch. So thanks for that really cool discussion. That was really neat.
You know, Ken, that question, I don't know if I can even answer it, but that's a question that I would rank on the same level as what if Jimi Hendrix was still alive, or what if Janis Joplin was still alive? Different world, I think we'd be living in musically.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, coming up is a very special event in memory of Davy Jones, and it's at Beavertown, Pennsylvania. Melanie Mitchell, the author of Monkey's Magic, a book about a TV show about a band, is going to be there, and so is Mr. Fred Velez. And a few other people, and we're going to have a couple calls from 2 people that are going to be there. We have a little bit of information we want to pass on to you folks. Davy Jones is to be remembered in a special event in June. A day-long event celebrating the life and memory of Davy Jones of the Monkees will take place on June 28th in Beavertown, Pennsylvania. The borough in the state's Snyder County was where Jones owned a ranch before his passing in 2012. The event will feature music from tribute bands like The Monkey Files, The Blue Meanies, The Characters, and singer Chris Pick. Also featured will be Fred Velez, the author of A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective. We plan to have him on the show as well. And the Monkey Mobile will be there on view as well. Today we have somebody who's going to be there, Amy Gravino. She's a speaker that's going to be at the event, joining us on the Zilch line right now. Hi, Amy. Introduce yourself.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Ken.
We are glad to have you. So tell us your thoughts about this event and why you feel it's important for Monkee fans to know all about it.
Well, when we lost Davy so suddenly in 2012, it was really such a heartache for so many of us, because we never believed that that sparkling boy who we saw on that TV show and whose voice we listened to singing those wonderful songs could be taken from us just quite so suddenly and without warning. And a lot of people were left without a sense of closure, without some way of kind of saying goodbye to Davy properly. And when the idea for the Beavertown Memorial came together, it was out of a lot of grief and mourning, but also a desire to pay tribute to Davy in a way that was really fitting for him and in a place that he had come to love and made his home. So the Beavertown Memorial became kind of the symbol of comfort and closure for so many fans who would never have had the chance to say goodbye to Davy any other way. And it also became a place of comfort for his family, who joined us at the first memorial and then last year as well, his daughters and everyone there, who just was united by our love for Davy and our love for the Monkees and wanting to just pay tribute to someone we all cared so deeply for.
Right. Absolutely. And his spirit lives on, whether it's in the Monkees DVDs or his music or his causes or his daughters and his family or all of us as fans. He will never truly be gone from us, because, like you say, we will always see that smile of that young man, and that smile is going out there through all of the fans' love for all of eternity. So it's just good that people are remembering him, and it's a chance for fans to get together, hear some good Monkees music, see the Monkee Mobile, and think about Davy Jones.
Absolutely.
Celebrate life, and we're all about that here at Zilch. So,
absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, and we hope to have you on the show again. So,
well, thank you so much, Ken. I hope everyone who's able to come joins us at Beavertown this year. It's going to be a great event. I think everybody will really enjoy it. So I hope if you're in the area, you come on and have fun with us that day.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
And always take some time to monkey around.
You too.
And we also have someone else on the Zilch hotline who's going to be at the Davy Jones Beavertown event and the Brady Con. Mr. Fred Velez, how are you doing, sir?
Hello. Hi, Ken. How's everybody?
And Fred, you've written a book, and the name of it is?
The name of it is A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkees from a Fan's Perspective.
So check that out on Amazon. Tell us a little bit about the Beavertown event.
The Beavertown event is a special event that has been held the last couple of years since Davy Jones passed away. The first one actually was about a week after Davy died. It was a special memorial held by the folks in Beavertown, which was like Davy Jones' second home in the United States. It was a very moving event. Mike Schoenfeld, I believe, helped to put it together. And the mayor at the time, who unfortunately passed away last year, was involved as well. And they had memorials. They read letters from both Mickey and Peter, and they had to have a visual both at Davy's house and at the church that Davy had purchased to be the community center in Beavertown, which he was intending to turn into like a monkey museum.
Oh, wow.
They had it again last year to dedicate a statue in Davy's honor, and all four of Davy's daughters, Taya, Sarah, Jessica, and Annabelle, were in attendance, and they raised money for Davy's charity, the horses that he'd rescued. They dedicated the statue to Davy. One of the local artists down there put the statue. The statue at the time was a work in progress, so I think
right.
This year they're going to work on the statue again. Hopefully this is the finished one.
Yeah, it looks really nice from the pictures I've seen of it. But it's mm-hmm. it's going to be a good time for Monkey fans, and you're going to have your book there. And
yes, I am.
So if you want your book signed or you want to purchase a book, you'll have it there. And, of course, you'll get to see the Monkey Mobile. So that's very cool.
Monkey Mobile will be there. And one of the things they had, I think they're going to have it again this year, was a special race to raise funds for Davy's charity. Davy's daughters were involved in it last year, and that was a hoot. That was really cool. So I hope fans coming to the Beavertown event on June 28th will have a great time. It'll be nice to see everybody. I'll be signing my books. Other folks will be there as well. You know, just come and have a great time.
Come on down, have a good time, and share the monkey love. And tell us a little bit about the BradyCon that's being put on by the fine folks who put on the Monkeys conventions. They're going to be doing a Brady convention, and you're going to be there as well, right?
Exactly. Jody Lynn and Phyllis Paganucci, who put together this year's Monkeys convention, were also last year's convention had involvement by members of the Bradys. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as you know, there is a Monkeys Brady connection. With,
everyone knows.
with the Getting Davy Jones episode from the Bradys, and also the Brady Bunch movie and the real life Brady Bunch, mm-hmm. where Davy appeared live with the cast.
Yeah.
And that's where David Alexander first met Davy, because he was the musical director of the real life Brady Bunch, and that's how they hooked up. So the Bradys were such a hit at last year's convention that they decided, hey, you know, there's a lot of Brady fans, let's put together a Brady convention. That's what they're doing, and that's going to be in August. Look up the Brady Bunch convention website, you get all the information there.
All right, well, thank you, Fred. Again, the name of your book is?
A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkeys from a Fan's Perspective. It's available on createspace.com. You can order it on Amazon as a softcover book or as a Kindle. You could order it also through Barnes & Noble, through their Nook. And it's available as an e-book on Apple iBooks and on Smashwords as well.
Okay, very good. Well, we're going to get back to our discussion on the Monkeys' first album, Side 2. So we'll see you, Fred. Take it away, guys. And now, it's time to flip the album over. Everybody get ready. Got your seatbelts on?
That riff is coming.
Here we go. All right. Whew. All right. We flipped over. This way we don't burn. See, if we're tanning, we won't burn. So here we go. We are on side two of the Monkees. And here's the song that really made it happen for everybody, don't you think, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
And it is Last Train to Clarksville. This has a riff that just doesn't quit, and it does sound like a train headed your way. The lyrics are amazing, and I'm going to let the panel discuss it. We'll start off with Mr. Craig Smith.
You know, interesting lyrically, of course, about a soldier going off to Vietnam. And so that's kind of a little hidden. I don't know that you'd take, you know, this is something I read as a child. I don't know if one would take that away from it, just hearing the song for the first time or hearing the song for years and not knowing that that's kind of the impetus behind it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, very cool. And, you know, obviously Monkey's first single, you know, the story about, you know, Mickey and Davy hearing it in the car and just all the joy. And I mean,
why don't you tell that story?
I believe it was kind of the first moment where Mickey, I believe it was Mickey or Davy, I've heard them tell the story, where it was the moment that they realized that they had made it. It was, you know, they were in the car and they heard it and just like giggling and hugging each other. And it was just a joyful, joyful moment.
Absolutely. Well, it would have to be. It was the first thing that let them know that what they were doing was going to be heard by someone.
Sure.
Because they were knocking out three episodes like in a week almost, it seemed like.
Yeah, it's amazing the pace in which this stuff was done, including, you know, the songs. It's once we got to see like the actual sessions, and anybody that doesn't have Andrew Sandoval's book should really, really get it if you're a Monkees fan. It details pretty much every session at length. I mean, they were working constantly.
And it's definitely a must-have. It's definitely a must-have.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Jeff Hewlett, your thoughts on the massively wonderful Last Train to Clarksville?
The song that started it all. Just to add into a little bit more of what Craig was saying, you know, you've got what was a humongous hit for them that featured mature subject matter, mature lyrics, but appealed to a young audience, right? Uh-huh. I mean, a lot of the people didn't, kids didn't pick up on the fact that the song was about a soldier going off to Vietnam, but it was, you could tell that the guy singing the song was in love with a girl and he's trying to have his last fleeting moments with her before he catches this train and he is not sure whether he's coming back home or not. I think this is one of the reasons why this band resonated so much with me when I was younger, is because it wasn't this mindless, senseless pop music for the sake of making pop music. There was a message behind it, and it was deeper than just making a hit record. You know, that we really were trying to say something with it.
To me, the Monkees were rarely drivel.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Or 100%. Insipid, and other
except,
big words.
Except Ladies' Aid Society.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Or insipid, and other words like gymnasium.
And Let's Dance On, by the way.
or banal and insipid.
There you go. Mickey's performance on this is just so amazing, vocally.
It is.
Mr. Craig Cohen.
Yeah, expanding on the vocals overall are really, really exceptional on this album. The background vocals are, you know, doing this, I guess, almost sort of like train whistle type thing.
Yeah.
Which is really, really neat. It is just a great driving song. You know, like we said, it kind of broke them. And, you know, that's the reason it's like the second most played song that they've ever done live.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Peter Tork. Mickey Dolenz. And my assistant, the
instrumentation, and even the bit with the cymbals, it's just so killer. This is almost a perfect song, don't you guys agree?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And to me, it earns its place every time it's played.
That just makes me curious as we go on to find out exactly what the perfect song for you is going to be, if this is almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, it's one of the.
Okay, I'll go.
Because Day Tripper, Paperback Writer, Last Train to Clarksville. Yeah, yeah, it's one of the. Yeah, I absolutely misspoke. I'm sorry. I'm glad you cleared that up.
Oh, I was just curious.
Oh, I messed up. You know, this just doesn't seem to be my day.
Oh. Hey, wait a minute.
No, go
on. Segue.
Go
on. I think you did something there.
You were saying?
I just thought it was amazing that you tied that all into
second
track on side two there.
Oh.
That's like chess level stuff where you're like four moves ahead of me.
I'm waking up to find a nightmare of a different kind. She went away. This just doesn't seem to be my day. She didn't.
So, This Just Doesn't Seem to Be My Day, written by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart once again. Lead vocal by Mr. Davy Jones. What do you guys think of this, Mr. Jeff Hewlett?
Unspectacular, in my book. While not my least favorite track on this album, it's kind of a weird cross between, a Davy Jones ballad like I Want to Be Free and Take a Giant Step. The style kind of melds and creates a sort of a strange dichotomy. And this is one of those points on the record where if you have listened to some of the other songs that were recorded around the same time period and didn't make the album, you kind of wonder why they stuck a song like this on the record as opposed to a song like All the King's Horses, right? You would think, because that's actually a much better song in my opinion. Then This Doesn't Seem to Be My Day, but
I'm going to disagree with you on that one. I've never cared for that song.
Really?
Yeah, but it used to really.
All the King's Horses?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
But it really used to bug me when I try to find that track. You know, you're going around trying to find it back in the day, and it's like, where is that song? You know,
That's when you hold a portable tape recorder out up to your television speaker.
That's exactly what I did.
Yep,
I did that. I had a little one of those little mono condenser mic tape recorders, and I held that sucker up to the one speaker on the front of my TV, and I recorded that song so that I could have it.
Yeah, I did that too with like every different version. Right. I had a 90-minute cassette full, and I'd put like my favorite bits of dialogue. Oh boy, was I a kid.
We have a lot in common.
Seriously.
Don't we all? We're monkey nerds, and we love it. Mr. Craig Cohen, your thoughts?
It's funny. It seems like me and Jeff have opposing viewpoints on certain songs. Because this, after it's all said and done, is one of my, probably my top five songs on this album, and it's funny because you see this for the first time or hear it for the first time on the Royal Flush episode of the show where they have that sort of beach romp, and the song doesn't really make sense with the romp they're going on. But the first time I heard this song, I remember just thinking, oh, that's, you know, pretty disposable, and it's got the gimmicky like electric sitar or whatever it is on it. It was one of those songs where I couldn't stop singing it. And it became one of those, like, I guess they call them earworms. And I just constantly, even preparing for this episode, going back and listening to this album, this would be the song that I would find myself singing. So
why don't you give us a taste of it now?
Come on, go for it, Craig.
Oh, goodness.
If you love music, then you can play music. And all it takes is just love, because baby, in the final analysis, love is power. That's where the power's at.
It's just really one of those things where I don't know if it's just how unique it is, but there's just something about this song that I really, really dig. And it's under 2.5 minutes long, too, which is you can sort of try and crack the code and determine what the perfect song length is. But 9 times out of 10, unless you're doing some kind of crazy opus, coming in under 3 minutes is a good thing.
Who's doing background vocals?
Davy Jones leading backing vocals. You have Tommy Boyce, Bobby Hart, and Ron Hicklin on backing vocals.
Because I swear to God, it sounds like Mickey Dolenz.
Wayne Irwin also.
Doesn't it sound like Mickey Dolenz, though?
It does, but I swear I hear Peter Tork on Shorty Blackwell. Like, there are just times where you think you hear the timbre of another monkey that's not there.
Wow. Breaks my heart. At least it doesn't break my Boyce and Hart, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Mr. Craig Smith, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm not going to talk. I can't follow that.
Oh, come on. You have to. This just doesn't seem to be my day.
I'm just going to go between these two guys. I'm going to say this is kind of like a middle-of-the-road track. Don't love it. Don't hate it. I always thought that the opening and the closing bits, with that, you know, the electric sitar is interesting. This was one of the songs that hit me into being even more of a Monkees geek when the Arista CD of this album came out in 1987, mm-hmm. and this song went on for a considerably longer period of time. And here I am now, 23 years later, running a website on such things, which is just ridiculous. The thing I find awkward about this track is kind of the verse. I don't like Davey's delivery on the fast bit. I don't think it doesn't work for me.
Yeah, it is kind of different.
I like the song, I just don't know that I like the execution, per se.
Makes sense. Probably going to get some rocks thrown at me. As much as I love this next song, I think this is like filler. It almost seems like, well, we have to have this kind of song on there. This sounds like something that's out there already, so we'll have the guys do something like this. It doesn't seem like it was real inspired to me. But the track I'm talking about is Let's Dance On, written by Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. Lead vocals by Mickey Dolenz. And Bobby Hart plays the organ, so there you go.
Let's dance on. Oh, baby, come on. Let's dance on till the dawn. Have fun till the music's all gone.
Any thoughts on this one, Mr. Craig Smith?
Banal and insipid.
Yeah. Send all hate mail to Craig Smith, courtesy of.
Yeah, I mean, I know this was from one of the first sessions they ever did, but I've always felt this to be a throwaway. I don't like this song at all. Cheers.
Mr. Jeff Hewlett.
Yeah, send some of the hate mail my way, too, because I'm going to rag on this as well. This is my least favorite song on the record by a long shot. I don't really see the need for a dance rocker. I mean, we've had songs in the past where guys call out names of different dances, and, you know, it just doesn't seem to fit with the rest of the songs on this album. Mickey calling out the Watusi and the Snoopy, and almost seems like a copycat sort of a song, and I'm really glad that this type of track did not persist through the rest of their career.
Now, I could see of it being a value for play during a TV show, like if they were playing a dance or something, this would be a perfect for that kind of an event. You know, like you would see the Monkees hired for a dance or something, yeah. And you know, this would make sense. But
true, but it doesn't make it a great inclusion on this album.
No, this is, to me, this is filler and B-side material right here. Yeah.
And I mean, if we're talking about listing dances, Davey does it so much better on She Hangs Out.
That's
so I'll
true.
Take that instead.
Oh, absolutely.
There you go. Mr. Craig Cohen.
Well, I am not inviting you guys to my next party.
Where's the disconnect button here?
This would be the lead-off and closing track on my Craig's Party playlist. It is a filler song, though, but this is one of those, you know, I talked earlier about, like, that garage rock feel, and I just really love that style, and I just picture the guys in a garage in California just, you know, banging away, and I don't know, it's a song that makes me smile, so that's not a bad thing, but yeah, I mean, if you do look at this album and think of where the fillers are, this is definitely one of them.
And again, in my mind's eye, when I listen to this album, Peter's on background vocals there, so there
can
you
I
go.
Interrupt for just a second? So this party that you're making the party mix for,
yes,
will you be doing the pony and the Watusi at said party?
I'll
well,
be
you
doing
know what?
The jerk.
Unfortunately, since you're not getting the invite, you'll never know.
Oh, wow. Denied.
Everyone's invited, though. Come on.
Yeah, when I'm having a party, yeah, if you hear Let's Dance On and the doors open, come on in.
Okay, wow. Sounds nice. Good. Either way, I'm going to be true to you. I'll be true to you as the next song.
I was trying to find a way to work that in.
There you go. Mr. Craig Smith, why don't you take this one?
I'll be true to you. You know, I kind of lump this unfairly in with a lesser song like The Day We Fall in Love. It's you know, it's the other Davey ballad on this album aside from I Want to Be Free. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's not really targeting guys like us.
Right.
It's not on any of my party playlists.
To you, yes, I will. I won't know.
The interesting thing, I mean, this is one of those songs for me that always just went by and I didn't care about it. And then when I saw the Monkees live in 87, Davey performed this, and it was enough of a deep cut that I was like, wow, he's doing I'll Be True to You. And it was kind of awesome. I mean, it was really cool. And so I appreciate the song on that level. I don't know that I'd put it on a Monkees best of. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, yeah. Again, targeted at the teen girl, and therefore not my speed.
It always kind of reminded me, like, for example, other songs on this album would be like the Beatles. This would be like Gary and the Pacemakers.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Davy Jones really sells this one part, the one part where he says, you know, where it comes out of "Yes, I Will," and the song. Like changes tempo and he says I used to be the kind who said that every girl's the same and love was just a game for having fun. That's a really good delivery right there, and to me that's the best part of the song as far as I'm concerned.
I would agree with that. I concur.
Mr. Craig Cohen.
Really, really beautiful ballad. I love the production on it. The drums just have such a great full sound. You know, as sappy as this sound, I really dig the spoken word part that Davey does, and I'm sure back then all the girls thought Davey was talking to them. But like I said, I think this is the better of the two ballads on the album, so I think people that are reluctant to listen to this, just check out the production and the sound of things, because like I said, I think the drum sound on this is just really, really killer.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Jeff Hewlett.
I'm really glad that Craig is here to champion the crappiest songs on this album. I'm just kidding.
Wait, can you differentiate between the Craigs when you say that, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Craig Cohen is here to differentiate between the crappiest.
Well, I got to be here for something, Jeff.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so. This is strategically placed on the album just as the ballad version of I Want to Be Free, as one of the swoonier moments of the record. You got to have some stuff on there for the young girls to fall in love with. And, you know, Craig mentioned the spoken word part. I was going to bring that up too, is a, you know, I can see the girls picking up the needle, moving it back, playing the spoken word part again. And he's talking to me, you know, because he's kind of just, it's almost like he's looking directly into the camera and speaking directly into your heart. One of the things that did stand out a little bit about this song, and of course at the time you wouldn't know this if this was the first record you heard, but we hear Davey singing about love being a game in other times during their career. So I thought it was interesting that theme recurred for him.
It does come up a lot.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, wow. Now that you say that. Yeah,
now we've stumbled upon something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll pick up that connection as we move further through the albums. But so, I mean, it just seems like if you go through this song line by line, it's almost like an amalgamation of every other love song you ever heard, kind of Frankensteined and lifted up onto the roof. Lightning struck it, it came back down, and they gave it to Davey to sing. So, you know,
great analogy.
Unspectacular to me.
Makes sense. Unknown backing vocals. So, in my mind, it's all the Monkees, whether it's real or not, I don't care. Yeah. And of course, Bobby Hart brings it on the Glockenspiel once again.
Getting the most use out of that clock.
Well, they rented it. They got to use it, right?
Absolutely.
The original title for this song was "Yes, I Will." Mm-hmm. So there we go.
And now, we won't. Some of us.
That's true. No, we won't. Ouch. Well, this one's to me, where another one of those times where I'm putting the bib on and gonna enjoy this big old steak of a song. "Sweet Young Thing," written by Michael Nesmith, Gary Goffin, and Carole King. So it's a bit of an unusual pairing there that see Mike write with them. Mm-hmm. And we have lead vocals by Michael Nesmith, backing vocals by Mickey Dolenz, and Glenn Campbell is one of the guitar players on this one as well. Mr. Jeff Hewlett, "Sweet Young Thing."
Oh, this is a monster of a song, belted out by Mike. A heavier country feel than Papa Jean's Blues. I mean, you've actually got the fiddle going on in the background for quite a bit of it. It makes a big piece of the song. I mean, it's for my taste, it may be a scoonce too much country, but not affecting it in a negative way. This is still one of my top songs on the record, and some great, great background vocals going on in this.
And you know how you talk about being heavy? This might sound weird, but this almost reminds me of Tomorrow Never Knows by the Beatles, how it has that same kind of bit that just goes, it's driving on and on and on and on, like a dervish kind of thing.
It kind of almost comes out of left field, kind of like Tomorrow Never Knows, where you're hearing a bunch of other songs before it, and you're like, wait a minute, this is kind of almost a departure. Yeah. Compared to what I've just been listening to.
And it's kind of, you know, hard. It actually does have a stomp to it, you know, whether that's like a hillbilly kind of stomp or, but gosh, it's fun to drive to, this song.
Oh, totally.
Mr. Craig Cohen.
I love this song. For me, if I had to describe it to somebody, I would say this is like Hee-Haw on acid. It's just, you know, for me, I love the country element of the stuff that Mike does. And here I just think with the fuzz guitars, and like you said, the stomps, it's a great driving song. And I really, 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 really dig this tune. And I'm glad that this is one that we can all agree on.
I believe so. Mr. Craig Smith, your thoughts on Sweet Young Thing?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Sweet Young Thing is, you know, in the track before this, you have Davey singing to the 12 and 13-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Now you got Mike singing to the older teens, right? This is the older, more sophisticated teenage girls are listening to a song like this, and Mike's blowing their mind, right? Just awesome. Awesome, awesome track. It's there's not much to say about it that hasn't already been said, but, I mean, it's just, it's a barnstormer. It's incredible. And I do have some insight on the three drummers, as it were.
Oh, yes.
What it is the drummer on the track was Hal Blaine, and then you had Gary Coleman and Frank DeVito doing percussion. Ah. And it's the same with Papa Jean's Blues.
What you talking about, Craig?
So a drummer and two percussionists.
What do you think of how the band's been doing this live with, like, Mickey playing like an Indian type beat to it?
What is that thing called? My friend has one. It's the drum that you sit on and play.
It's a drum box, right?
Yeah, it's got a name, and I can't remember quite what it is.
Is it like a tabla?
No, it actually just looks like a straight up box that you sit on, and you can play it with brushes or sticks or your hands or whatever. Mm-hmm. And depending on where you hit on the box looking thing, you get a different tone. I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, you don't really go to a Monkees show and expect to hear a different arrangement of a track. And it was nice to hear this track at all. I don't think that this track had ever been played since 1967 or so.
Right.
So to hear it again and just, you know, and I mean, like, really every song on the recent tours has been a joy to see them play. And I enjoyed the arrangement. I thought it was really good.
Reminds me of Nairobi Trio. But yeah, just need a mat.
Give me some mallet.
You guys may not know what the Nairobi Trio is, but
I do. Watch this.
Oh, listen.
Michael.
That's it. Glad to see it's still incomprehensible. You know, Mick, as you're doing that, it just brings to mind that we did not win a Peabody this year. We haven't ever won a Peabody.
Nor a Pulitzer,
and which is perfectly sensible since we're not journalists, but still, you would think.
Yeah, you think. Nor a Obie, nor an Emmy.
Just however, we can do this. Yeah.
I agree. It's nice, but I would love to hear the full stomp of it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, just a great track all around. Would we vote this for favorite track of the album, since we all seem to be uniform on it, or would that be Last Train to Clarksville?
It's not my favorite track on the album, but it is very high up there.
All right, favorite track on the album, Jeff?
That would be Papa Jean's Blues for me.
Okay. Greg Cohen?
Goodness, I...
You gotta pick one. Just take a potato chip out of the bag. Tell us what it is.
Saturday's Child.
Okay. Mr. Craig Smith?
Contrary to what I said at the beginning of this episode about it being a Mike song, I'm going to vote Saturday's Child as well.
Wow. I'm going to go with Last Train to Clarksville, seconded by Sweet Young Thing.
Interesting picks.
I didn't know we were getting seconds.
Me neither.
Well, I'm just putting it out there. Oh.
And a Buy Me a Dog doesn't rank?
Speaking of going to buy me a dog. Woof. A dog? Yeah.
I was actually trying to time my dog barking to coincide with us talking about this track. It totally backfired, though.
Our monkey dogs make an appearance every so often as we record. So, thoughts on Gonna Buy Me a Dog, Mr. Jeff Hewlett?
I love this track. I love that the album is kind of bookended with novelty songs. So you've got the theme song, and then at the end you've got Gonna Buy Me a Dog. I think this is the only song in the Monkees entire catalog that gets close to capturing the zaniness of the TV show. So, you know, you've got a lot of pop songs and country songs and ballads, but nothing really illustrates in audio form what you see when you watch the TV show. And I really love the fact that Davey throws in a dig at Circus Boy in this when he tells Mickey he can only train elephants. One of my favorite parts of the whole track. But it's the two of them just riffing with each other. And I love that, you know, they're riffing so much that the engineer has to come in and try to tell him to calm down and tell Mickey when to come back in from a musical break. And it's just a fun, fun, fun track.
Mr. Craig Smith.
I absolutely agree with what Jeff just said. The interesting thing about this song, I think it was the 1986 Monkees Convention I had a VHS of once, and somebody asked what the story was behind Gonna Buy Me a Dog. And Mickey's like, they actually wanted us to seriously take this song, and we just had to start goofing on it because it was like the worst lyric ever.
Right.
And to your point... Yeah, it is the one place where you get the kind of zaniness of the TV show. I mean, excluding the head soundtrack, which isn't quite the same, but you got your dialogue bits on there. But it makes me wonder if that was the kind of thing that maybe they wanted to kind of represent on the albums and just didn't after this. Or if this was just a one-off and they thought it was funny enough to kind of just throw at the end of the album. It would have been cool if they would have put maybe a little more of the... you know, some more dialogue-driven tracks in terms of the goofiness and the silliness of the TV show throughout the albums.
Mr. Craig Cohen, your thoughts on Gonna Buy Me a Dog? I can't believe I'm saying this, like, seriously. You know, like, what are your thoughts on, you know, like a political commentator, and we're talking about Gonna Buy Me a Dog. But, Craig, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was really neat. I never really put it together when Jeff pointed out that the album is really sort of bookended by... gimmicky TV show type stuff, but it's a really fun song. I don't see how anybody could really dislike it, you know, based on what it is. It's a joke song that still makes me laugh, and it's another one of those songs where I can imagine sitting in my room in 66 if I was around to listen to this, picturing in my head the guys in the studio just, you know, having fun and riffing with each other. So cool closing track, just a lot of fun.
Well, there's a bit of bizarreness that comes along with this. When we see the Monkees DVD sets and we've all seen the clips of the boys trying out for the Monkees, we see them trying out on the set of a TV show called The Farmer's Daughter.
Yep.
Well, also on the TV show The Farmer's Daughter, a young man named Davy Jones appeared back in 1965, and he actually sings this song with the cast of The Farmer's Daughter.
Oh, wow.
The set was owned by Screen Gems and everything, so a little bit of symmetry, if you will. But from his pre-Monkey days, here's a clip of... You might be able to hear Davy singing. He's actually... In the clip, he's locked in a closet the daughter and the brother are singing, and they have weird Beatle-type wigs on, and Davey's in a closet actually singing this song, so we're going to play a little bit of that right now.
Will you close the door, Mr. Morley? You'll ruin our blend.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Well, my girl got to call me up and told me from my sins. You should have heard the things he said. You know she hurt my feelings deep. I'm gonna buy me a dog, 'cause I need it for now. I'm gonna buy me a dog. I guess she don't love me now.
So that's kind of bizarre, a little bit of weird monkey history. So it seems like Boyce and Hart were tied to Davy Jones a little sooner than the Monkees actually started, if you will.
And it's interesting how something like that can stay under wraps for so long, or at least, I mean, I collected Monkees videos for years from the age of 13 on, and this was something that I didn't see until it showed up on YouTube, like last year or a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things like that, like Davy singing French song in a movie. You know, things like that that I never knew existed. It's like, where does it end?
Well, it's also weird when you, in the U.S., we celebrated the Beatles' historic first appearance on Ed Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And you get the DVD set, which has the first four appearances or whatever, the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. And on the first night that the Beatles made their appearance in the United States of America, Davy Jones was on there from the cast of Oliver, and he's right there, right at the beginning of Beatlemania in the United States, so it's kind of bizarre.
Absolutely coincidental and crazy to see.
I know, it's like, am I really seeing this? That's the feeling that you get. I sat down with my wife, and on the anniversary, we sat down with my family, and we all kind of watched it, and we were all tripped out, you know, that there's Davy. I mean, I had known it, but it's just weird when you think about just how it unfolded. And of course, at the end of Gonna Buy Me a Dog, Davy does that famous, they're coming to take us away, ha ha. I'm going to play a little bit of a hit by Napoleon the 14th. And of course, reversed, the flip side of that song was the same song, just reversed. And I used to have the 45 as a child, and I would play it and drive everyone insane. So there you go.
Now, how many of you here, that sounded way too much like a Paul Stanley reference, and I apologize for that, but how many of you people over here would listen to this album and turn the volume all the way up at the end of this to hear like every last bit of session dialogue?
Me.
Oh, okay. Totally. Oh,
of course.
Okay. Just want to make sure I wasn't the only one.
This album has a rich history with me because I would play this every day before school, my last year of school, along with the disc Cheap Trick from 1977. And I would have the two albums, the two platters. They would do side A, and they'd both play each side, and then I'd flip them both over, and then you'd hear the rest of the, you know, side two of both of those albums. So for a long time, it was almost seemed like they were the same album, if that makes sense. just from playing them all the time like that.
Wow.
But I know it's a bit of a weird strangeness. Now let's talk about
Davy Jones and Cheap Trick actually collaborated on a song called Dream World Police.
Well, in all reality, Mickey Dolenz is on a show called Boy Meets World, and mm-hmm. he's in a band with Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. So it
That's
all
right, right?
It all comes together somehow.
It
some
does.
Way.
So mad. I asked my family doctor just what I had. I said, doctor, Miss MD, can you tell me what's ailing me? He said, yeah, yes, indeed. What I really need is power. Give me some love. Got to have that love. Give me some love. Got to have that love.
Before we get into the bonus tracks on this, let's talk about how long it actually took to record the album. according to what I'm seeing here, it's pretty much July 1966. And keep in mind, they were filming a TV show, probably about 4 or 5 episodes, while they were doing this at the same time.
Right. The sessions for the second album kind of bleed into these a little bit. There's a little bit of an overlap.
Right.
But yeah, they were, you know, done I can't remember which the last song from this album that was recorded is. I'm kind of consulting my book, but on the fly, it's difficult. But yeah, it might have all been wrapped up in July. I believe it's just actually it was, yeah, because they started they did I'm Not Your Stepping Stone in July. So yeah, I think it might have all been wrapped up by like the 25th or 26th of July, maybe.
So basically, in the first 2 months of the band's existence, they were filming probably 7 or 8 TV shows and 2 albums.
Yeah.
Wow, that just doesn't happen nowadays, does it?
Yeah, it's insane.
Monkeys is the craziest people.
Well, let's look at some of the bonus tracks. I Can't Get Her Off My Mind, Davy Jones' lead vocal. Any thoughts on that one, guys? I'll just leave it to the panel.
Obviously, we recorded for Headquarters.
Yeah.
An early version of said track. Interestingly enough, this was a song that they performed during their early shows. There's a bootleg from, I believe it's the show that was recorded for, no, Phoenix. Was it Phoenix? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was a show from January in Phoenix. And I believe this is in the set list, wow, which is interesting.
Now, we're not going to hit every version of this. For example, the theme from the Monkees with vocals by, you know, Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart. We're not really going to pay too much attention to that right now. I Don't Think You Know Me is a Michael Nesmith. No, actually, Gary Goffin and Carole King wrote that. Why do I think Michael wrote that?
He does sing one version of it.
Yeah. The first version that was released on Missing Links. It's interesting that everybody except Davey had a turn at doing the vocals on this song.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting that they go through so much and just it doesn't get released.
Yeah. Why don't we play a mix of the 3 different attempts, just a little bit of it, and kind of let people hear Pete, Mickey, and Mike's take on it.
If you think I want the life you choose to live, I don't think I want the love you got to give. If you think my goals could be so trivial and small, then I don't think you know me at all. If you think I want the life you choose to live, I don't think I want the love you got to give. If you think my goals would be so trivial and small, well, I don't think you know me at all. Born between the covers of your passion,
thoughts on this song, guys?
I like this song a lot, and I think for me the definitive version would be Mike's vocal.
I would agree with that.
The Mickey is good, the Peter's is pretty rough, but I think the first release version that was on Missing Links is probably the best of the versions.
I agree. It bothers me when Peter says stanza instead of stanza. Something that he also did when he performed it live in 2011. Monkey Store.
You Just May Be the One. This is one I think worth looking at. What do you guys think? Any thoughts on You Just May Be the One?
Great song.
Yeah, definitely a great song. I love these tracks that you hear early versions of that wind up on subsequent albums down the road. It kind of gives you an interesting perspective on how songs can evolve throughout the career of the Monkees, because there's some that didn't come out for a long, long time after they were originally attempted.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about this one is you get to hear this song as it was and then get to hear it with the Monkees totally performing it on their own. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to kind of have the juxtaposition yep. with something like that once they kind of got control and started playing on their own tracks to see kind of how it fleshed out and how it got a little more garage bandy, you know?
Right.
Is it the same version that's on Missing Links 2? Does anybody know?
It's the version on Missing Links 2. It's a different mix.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's the version I'm familiar with.
And the version in the episode is an early mono mix that hasn't been released on any of the deluxe CDs.
Yet.
Correct. Yet.
Until hopefully soon. I prithee, do not ask for love. Thoughts on that one?
I find it very interesting that Mickey selected this to remake on his solo album.
Me too.
Because it's one of those mysteriously never released songs. You got a couple of different versions that are floating around out there on Missing Links and bonus tracks, and it's been attempted a few times, but never saw the light of day. And when I saw the track list for Mickey's album, my eyebrow peaked up like, And I mean, we'll talk about that more when we get to it, but right. Very interesting choice.
Yeah. Of course, we have the backing track or instrumental version of Gonna Buy Me a Dog, which, as weird as this sounds, I almost get lost in it without the performance. It almost doesn't sound like that song to me.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Somebody online actually took the vocals from the album version and placed it on top of this, and it was a very, very good mashup.
But it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
And of course, we've got the Monkees radio spot and the Kellogg's jingle. And then we get to All the King's Horses, which Mr. Jeff Hewlett loves. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about that, Jeff?
I think my love for this song was born out of my obsession with this song because it was on the show and never on a record. And I just couldn't, as a young kid, I couldn't deal with the fact that it wasn't available somewhere because I really enjoyed the song. And I thought it was an interesting vocal. It led into my obsession with the band because I wanted to collect everything. And fortunately, I had access to everything that was commercially released through my uncle, but, you know, going through all of his records, and I'm thinking this is on there somewhere, and it just wasn't there.
You know, it's weird when you said obsession with the band, I heard. Obsession with the band now.
Yeah.
And just another thing that I want to see if you guys experienced having watched the episodes as youths. I remember, when they showed them on Nickelodeon, they would show like the syndicated prints, and the songs in the episodes would not match up with the songs listed at the end of the episode.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So like it was a wild goose chase. I remember there were songs that I just could not figure out what they were, or mm-hmm. I thought that they were something else until I would get the album. And like For Pete's Sake was one of them.
Exactly.
No idea what the title of that song was. I'm looking through all the albums looking for In This Generation. And then I was reading in The Monkey's Tale how Randy Scouse-Gitt was like they described the lyrics in some way that made me think it was that. So then I went looking after that, and that wasn't it. So yeah, it was interesting because, I had my notebooks of Monkees facts as a child and what songs were in every episode. And it was... I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things that gets you into that stuff. Like, it totally immerses you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can I ask a question on top of your question, Craig?
Sure.
Do you guys think what they did in syndication with the replacing of songs was a good thing or a bad thing? I know the versions out on DVD now are the original broadcast versions, so they've got the proper songs. But what's your take on replacing songs?
I think it's a genius move. I saw the ones on Nickelodeon. They were full of Headquarters songs. Mm-hmm. And just the idea of running it during the summer reruns and inserting the new album that you're selling, I think that's a great idea. From a collector's point of view, it's interesting to kind of see, you know, the different versions of the episodes out there. But I thought it was really cool. I thought it was kind of a cool idea. Would you agree?
I think it's a cool idea, but it's also left me with a sense of longing, as weird as that sounds.
How so?
Because I have a memory of it being a certain way at times.
True, yeah.
And I'm trying to find that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like when Peter looks forlorn. Is it I Want to Be Free or Forget That Girl?
Ooh, you know? See, that makes a big difference right there.
It does.
Wow, wow, wow. And of course, we've got You Just May Be the One and the fast version of I Want to Be Free. Another version of I Don't Think You Know Me, and I Won't Be the Same Without Her. Any thoughts on that one, guys?
It's another one of those songs that would materialize much further in the future.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So interesting to hear this early of a version of that.
Actually, what is that on the deluxe? I Won't Be the Same Without Her?
Yep.
Wow. I didn't even realize that was on there.
Yeah, disc two. It's a mono version, I think.
Oh, yeah. Early mono mix. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting that a lot of these songs kind of sat around in the vaults and like, well, they're looking to put together another album. Like, oh, we'll pull this one out. We'll throw this one on.
Well, yeah, Instant Replay is absolutely them mining the vaults for whatever, you know.
Absolutely. Fulfilling the contract, as it were.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's kind of the first, you know, when you get into the Monkees, at least in the 80s, and you start discovering the albums and you find out that Instant Replay is, you know, loaded with a bunch of songs from 1966, that's when you start to wonder, like, why do these songs, like, there's some great songs there, you know, that just fell by the wayside.
Totally.
It's always hard to pronounce this, propinquity?
Propinquity?
Propinquity. Propinquity.
I just call it.
Let's all say it together. Let's all say it together. Propinquity.
Propinquity.
It sounds like,
Something your doctor would prescribe.
Yeah. And if it gives you an erection for 4 hours, please consult a physician.
Wow.
When taking propinquity. I've just begun to care. And it makes you care, see? Maybe this is a drug that women could give their husbands to, like, I just want to be held. Propinquity. Mm-hmm. I've just begun to care. Anyway.
Put on some I'll Be True to You.
Yeah. What do you guys think of propinquity?
Well, this was a demo version of it that was on the bonus tracks of this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the full, the fleshed out version was a bonus track on, is it the Monkees Present set or is it the Instant Replay set?
I believe it's on Present. There might be a mix of it on Instant Replay. Some of the tracks kind of carry over.
I can't quite
remember which are on which, but yeah, recorded in you know, during the 68 Nashville sessions, Nesmith.
Yep.
It is on Instant Replay.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. And of course, recorded with the First National Band as well, as several of his, you know, Monkees era 68 songs were.
That's such a weird album.
What's that?
Wait.
The First National Band stuff?
Wait, is that the one I'm thinking of? The one that has the instrumental music? No, that's not that one.
No,
that's
Wichita Train Whistle.
That's such
of.
A weird yeah. album.
It is.
I don't know. I can't sit through it myself.
I did once, the day I bought it on vinyl.
I'm sorry. it's something you want to have, but it's nothing you probably listen to.
it's an interesting piece. You know what? At the Monkees convention, when I was standing in line to get Mike's autograph, the person in front of me had a copy of the Wichita Train Whistle Sings, and Mike seemed very pleased to put his autograph on it, and he opened it up and he was kind of admiring the gatefold, and he's like, this is a really good one. So it's something he's definitely proud of.
Wow.
Are there a lot of copies of that floating around on vinyl, or?
I don't see it very often.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen one in the flesh aside from the one that I bought kind of on an impulse buy at a used record store.
I'll bet you're glad you got it then.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure you can pick them up on eBay and stuff, but in terms of like used record shops and secondhand places, not one that pops up often. Not a lot of Nesmith, really.
Right. It seems the people that buy it keep it.
It's true.
Well, and then there's another theme from the Monkees. If you're going to buy this album, I would recommend that you get the deluxe edition, the 2-disc set on CD. You can't go wrong.
Definitely. And don't forget a 3-disc deluxe edition coming out in 2 or 3 more months. We'll have to revisit it again then.
Yeah, I think they said November.
Is it November now? Yeah,
That's what they've been saying with the tour that's going on right now. If you bundle, you get the VIP experience or whatever,
okay.
you get a copy of the album, and they say it's expected in November. So
yeah,
take it for what it is.
At the convention, the scuttlebutt was August, and then by the time I had driven home, it was September, and now it's November. So hopefully that's as far as it's going to get pushed.
I guess get it a little bit closer to the holidays.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You gotta know that these Rhino handmade ones are, you know, pretty small production runs, and they're pretty elaborate, so they are very fluctuational when it comes to timing. I mean, the other ones were a little bit weird with timing. They kind of would skip a week here. They would get bumped a little bit here and there. Yeah. So,
but again, every one of these that's come out, we thought would be the last one.
swore to God they wouldn't be. I wouldn't get any more. I was thinking I got the birds and the bees. I'm like, wow, I'm really glad I got this. And then I got head, and I'm like, wow, they're not going to do any more after this.
Right.
And sure enough, I mean, Instant Replay was a little bit of a surprise, and Present was a big surprise.
Huge surprise. They
did
that.
It's like, wait a minute, where did this come from?
I mean, I remember Andrew saying for a long time, because I think that there was a pretty big gap between Instant Replay and Present. And he was saying that it was done and it was ready. It was just up to Rhino to kind of give them the okay. And so, I mean, they have to be selling enough to, you know, have them keep happening, you know.
Yeah, I think as we're finding with this show, there's a lot of people out there who really love this band.
Yeah, so definitely. I think
Rhino's marketing to the right crowd.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And that is it for side two of the Monkees' first album. Once again, we're joined by the lovely Sarah Clark. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hi. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you for joining us once again. And we just got done with side two. What are some of your favorite tracks from side two of the Monkees' first album?
This one is a hard call between Last Train to Clarksville and Sweet Young Thing, but yeah. I think I have to give it to Sweet Young Thing. I really loved the original version of it. Mm-hmm. I love the version you just played. I got to hear it in 2012 and 2013 live, and it was an amazing experience, and it gives you a whole new appreciation for that song.
Now, I personally like the faster version, but this is cool, too. I'm with you. Well, today we're going to do another Monkees Covers Corner. And this time we're looking at, last time we looked at the Monkees doing That Was Then, This Is Now. This time we're going to look at someone covering the Monkees, if you will. And it comes from a sad occasion. Richard Marx, upon finding out that Davy Jones had left us all, recorded this song. And it is, of course, I Want to Be Free. And here he is with his take and his little tribute to Mr. Davy Jones.
I want to be free, like the bluebirds flying by me, like the waves out on the blue sea. If you're to tie me, don't try me, say goodbye. I wanna be free. Don't say you love me, say you like me, but when I need you beside
you think of that version, Sarah?
Oh, it was wonderful. I'd not actually heard that one before, so it was great having a chance to hear it. I'm not sure I'd even heard of it before you mentioned it. So,
well, I think it really came from his heart, and it was kind of nice for all the fans of Davy and the Monkees to kind of know that we're not alone. You know, it was nice. It was kind of a nice thing to, for him to do.
Yes, and I think it's really kind of emblematic of the whole renaissance that the Monkees have had in the popular culture the last couple of years. I mean, it's sad that the thing that sparked it happened, that it took losing Davy for people to really kind of take a second look at the Monkees, but at least now they're getting a lot of the critical reception I've thought they've always deserved, and, you know, I have a feeling that somewhere Davy is very happy about that.
And we hope that all the fans listening are happy about this episode today. So thank you once again. And Sarah, you're going to be joining us on the roundtable discussion of Mickey Dolenz' great new album, Remember. So
yes.
Well, I think we're going to call this one a cast, guys. So we wrap up our discussion on the first Monkees album. We plan on doing some other roundtable discussions soon. We're going to do one on Mickey Dolenz' Remember album soon. We're also going to be doing more of the Monkees. And we're also going to be doing some actual scene commentary on some of the Monkees episodes. And eventually that'll be a big part of this show. So be looking forward to that. And if you have any questions or comments, hit us up on Facebook. Please rate us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and become part of the Zilch Army, if you will. I want to thank you guys for being part of this again tonight, and we look forward to doing more of these, right?
Absolutely.
And of course, gentlemen, let us know where you can be found on the internet.
For Craig and Jeff, we have our Star Trek podcast, The Tricorder Transmissions, which you can find at thetricordertransmissions.com. We are also on Facebook, and we are on Twitter as TTT_pod.
Okay, Mr. Craig Smith.
I am the co-host of Pods and Sods, a podcast for the musically obsessed. You can find us on iTunes, Podomatic, and Facebook. If you want to go for something a little more monkey-centric, the website there is monkeysmixography.wikidot.com. And it's a site that anybody can kind of take part in. We dissect all the various Monkee mixes and songs and get very, very down to the minutia. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, it's definitely for you.
Okay, well, I guess it's time to wrap it up. So
bye.
Zilch, take some time to monkey around. Here we go. Walking down, the, down street. The street. We get the funniest looks from.
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Okay, there you go. That was painless.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Oh my God, I didn't hit record. I didn't hit record. No, I'm kidding. Hey, guess what? Boyce and Hart just shared us on their wall.
Get out.
Oh, wow, excellent.
That is so cool.
That's incredible.
We made it.
See, there you go. That's great.
Wonder if we can get him on. That would
you
be
probably
cool.
Could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell him we're going to talk Dolenz, Jones, Boyce, and Hart.
Yeah,
I'll
absolutely
totally get up for that, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
and my cat is, too, if you can hear him.
We just heard him.
Is that Shorty Blackwell, the cat?
Shorty Blackwell.
Yeah, you might as well call him that now. He's freaking the heck out outside my office door here.
He's feeling very bad today. Visit Monkees Mixography for all your Monkees discography needs.
Is
that
your site there?
It is.
It's very interesting. This is why we have editing. That's very interesting.
Somebody Ken, did you stub your toe?
No, not yet. Okay, go on.
Yeah, got it. Compared to other tracks I definitely put it over.
That'll be edited out then, because I want to sound cool and professional.
No, that's not right.
Anyhow. Why, oh, why, oh, why,
oh, Sam? This is Yannick. Sorry.
Tune in next week, ladies and gentlemen, for another Minute Short.